It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning we'll hear from community members in the Northern Panhandle who are wondering about the future of the Ohio Valley.
The cracker plant up in Pennsylvania has like 4,000 people or so constructing it, and they say that 6,000 this summer are going to be working there. Awesome. Great. But, I mean, if you look at the big picture, the short-term economic boom is not worth it.
We'll have that coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. Health officials in Huntington, West Virginia, say a cluster of HIV infections has grown to 71 confirmed cases. That's in a city that usually sees about 8 HIV infections in a year. As with an earlier such cluster in northern Kentucky, the primary cause of infection is needle drug use. Health officials say harm reduction programs are often an effective tool against HIV, offering needle exchanges and health screening services. But as Mary Meehan explains, many people are wary of syringe exchanges, and in some places that means programs are closing just when they're needed most.
Dr. Greg Corby Lee is the strategist for the University of Kentucky's Harm Reduction Initiative. He says community-based harm reduction programs can be a lifeline for those still using drugs.
You know, it takes a while for them to build that level of trust up, to come in. But that's their one bridge where they can be respected and be given nothing but help to stay healthy.
He says HIV is the primary focus.
Ultimately, though, the goal of the programs are to prevent HIV. That's what they were designed for, but there are a lot of other benefits that come with it.
He says prevention and testing for HIV are becoming more widely available, and stigma is gradually diminishing. But he and other health officials say there's also a backlash in many communities that threatens the harm reduction programs. Daniel Raymond is Deputy Director of Planning and Policy for the National Harm Reduction Coalition. He says some harm reduction services are closing. The problem is that lost services may not be replaced in the communities where they are needed most.
A lot of these programs have been starting in communities that don't have a long history with harm reduction. So the programs that end up being at risk of closure are often the ones that are getting scapegoated for a community's drug problem.
Dr. Michael Brummage says that's part of a problem he encountered when leading a program in Charleston, West Virginia.
And I think it's a simplistic view to look at and blame one program for all of a city's woes, with homelessness, with drug use, with all these other things.
The deeper issue, he says, is that the HIV threat is real and not going away. Less prevention equals more sick people. In Huntington, one person in the HIV cluster has died.
Some people in that community are saying, well, look, we have the syringe program and we still got HIV. Maybe we just need to close the program. Well, I mean, the fact that you have a fire doesn't mean you should close the fire department. You know, you bring more trucks on the scene. My guess is had Huntington not had a syringe program, this problem would have exploded far worse.
Scott County, Indiana, population 4,200, had 214 HIV cases in 2015. It was the nation's largest rural outbreak, and it became a bellwether for finding the best places to employ harm reduction programs.
This is a nationwide problem, and the boomerang effect, the recoil, is going to be if these programs start closing, you're going to see explosions of bloodborne pathogens, specifically HIV.
Still, harm reduction proponents remain optimistic. The National Harm Reduction Coalition says that for every program closing, 20 more open. Van Ingram is head of Kentucky's Office of Drug Control Policy. He says the spread of harm reduction programs requires a fundamental shift in thinking of drug use as a health problem instead of a problem for law enforcement. But it's happening.
I'll tell you that with 56 programs, I never dreamed we'd have this many. When the law passed, I did not think as many communities that have would have said, yes, we have a problem, and yes, we're going to address it. I'm glad to say I was wrong.
For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Mary Meehan.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Ella Jennings, a Northern Panhandle native, created a podcast called What Happened to Weirton to fulfill a master's in journalism from West Virginia University. The last episode looks at the current economic landscape of the old mill town, especially the developing petrochemical industry. She reports how many businessmen and politicians in the Ohio Valley are working hard to revitalize the economy, focusing primarily on those sectors. Not everyone is bought into the plan, though. Here's a segment from that episode titled Moving Forward.
Pollution in the valley used to mean economic security. If smokestacks were billowing gray clouds and soot covered your front porch, your parents probably had a good paying job. But now, with the mills and plants offering less and less jobs, some residents are questioning if the economic benefits can outweigh the environmental costs.
Hey,
Beth.
Yes.
Nice to meet you. I'm Ella.
Hi. Come on in.
Thank you.
You can sit there in a comfy chair.
I met with Beverly Reed, a lifelong resident of the Ohio Valley, at her family's bicycle shop in Bridgeport, Ohio. Bridgeport is just across the river from Wheeling, West Virginia, and a little over 10 miles north of the proposed PTT Global cracker plant. Beverly is an intern for the Sierra Club and works with the Freshwater Accountability Project as well as the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition. All of these groups have a shared goal.
The biggest thing we would like to do is to stop the PTT Global Petrochemical Complex from coming to Belmont County, Ohio.
Beverly is a registered nurse, and she said one of her primary concerns with the cracker plant is the effect it could have on the health of both humans and the environment. Last year, the Ohio EPA granted the project an air pollution permit. It allows the proposed cracker to emit millions of tons of greenhouse gases each year. It would be like putting 365,000 cars on the road. The permit also allows for the emission of other volatile compounds, such as benzene, which can leak from the valves and the equipment used in cracker plants. Beverly said that the Sierra Club and three other environmental groups are challenging this air permit.
So we're appealing it because it was woefully inadequate and not protective of human health.
With only 9% of plastic being recycled worldwide, Beverly is also troubled by the plant's possible contribution to an already established plastic crisis.
It's toxic. We don't need more of it. It's killing the oceans. It's killing all the marine life. It's killing us. It's found everywhere.
Ultimately, even though the region desperately needs high-paying jobs, she doesn't believe that this should be the path forward for the Ohio Valley.
People think that this is going to be our knight in shining armor. It's going to bail us all out. We're going to be thriving and everything, but that's not going to be the case. It's not. Plain and simple, it's not. It's going to be a short-term economic gain while the plant's being built or while any of the plants are being built out of the five that they want to build. And the cracker plant up in Pennsylvania has like 4,000 people or so constructing it, and they say that 6,000 this summer are going to be working there. Awesome. Great. But, I mean, look at what it represents. And I mean, if you look at the big picture, the short-term economic boom is not worth it. I mean, we'd probably see business in here, you know? But I don't care, you know? My family doesn't care. We care more about future generations and the environment.
There are many trajectories that the Ohio Valley could follow. One anticipates billions of dollars of investment, thousands of jobs, and national importance, as there is only one other petrochemical hub in the United States. A lot of money and political power are backing this route, but its disregard for automation could leave its economic revival looking far less human than anticipated. And the environmental factors involved make some afraid it could turn the area into a cancer alley, all of which are narratives and realities that the Ohio Valley is already familiar with. Another vision comes from the environmentalist standpoint and sees the valley as a hub of green energy and localized farming. Yet, with a much smaller budget and a lack of political support, the puzzle of how to supply sustainable jobs for the valley is still one to be solved. One truth that needs no speculation is that Weirton and the Ohio Valley deserve justice for its economic pain and suffering. No one will ever serve jail time for the mill shutdowns that led to a mass exodus from the area, broken families, and financially driven suicides. I'm not calling for some sort of retribution, but a question I continually asked myself throughout this series was, why did we deserve this? The same question is probably asked all across the American heartland, as more and more people are left wondering how their prosperity came crashing to an end. And yeah, I know, life isn't fair. But there are reasons why mills close, and there are reasons why there are no safety nets for those who slip through the cracks.
That was Ella Jennings, producer of the podcast, What Happened to Weirton. We'll hear a bit more from the folks in Weirton in just a moment. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:54. Areas of fog this morning, becoming partly sunny and humid today. There's a slight chance of afternoon rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s and low 90s. Heat index values could get as high as 100 degrees in some areas today. Partly cloudy tonight, lows in the 60s and 70s, partly sunny tomorrow. Chance of afternoon rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s and low 90s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Yeager Airport CRW, West Virginia's gateway to the world. More at yeagerairport.com. The final episode of the podcast, What Happened to Weirton, ends at the Festival of Nations, an annual celebration of the town's history and culture. Producer Ella Jennings wanted to hear what residents today want for the region. Here are some of the perspectives she collected.
Hoping for a better community for our area and we're in West Virginia.
I hope they could go back to the old what it used to be.
I would like to see all of the companies come back into Weirton.
I'm hoping that since they just took down the steel mill, they'll actually turn that into something that can kind of like, you know, bring some entertainment to the town.
If they can bring something into that area that would create jobs for this area, that would be a good thing, in my opinion.
We shall continue to grow up. We'll come back to life. We got the right people, and we will prosper.
I would really like them to do things to bring back the millennials and the Gen Xers, to have them have a reason to come back. One thing that may help that is more of a community buildup of things like green spaces.
With the steel mill going down, the only way to replace it is to have new business come in.
Having people realize that the people of Weirton actually have a lot to offer too. I think it's looking like a bright future.
I'm upset because I like the city council. There's no females. There's no people of color on the city council. I'm on the board of transportation as the director. I'm the only person of color. And it bothers me that they're not really reaching out to the community the way they should. So like in terms of Weirton, Weirton could grow, but they need the input from a different set of people.
I think a lot of people in this town need to realize progression and change is good. Let loose of what we were in the 70s and let's move into the future.
I would like to see the valley come alive again.
My hopes for Weirton are that everyone can, achieve their pursuit of happiness, whatever that may be, and that there's everyone has the opportunity, I guess, that they deserve, because everyone deserves the opportunities, even Weirton, and even the small town of Weirton.
That was a segment from a podcast called What Happened to Weirton. You can find the rest of that episode titled Moving Forward and the rest of the podcast online at wvpublic.org. Mm-hmm. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glenna Sport. I'm Teresa Wills.